You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. I'm slightly more depressed than I normally am, David, because of a crime story that has sort of hit me quite hard because it's an area that I knew quite well. But we'll talk about that at the end instead of football. But let's go through what has been a busy day for South African companies on the JSE Securities Exchange. Alt Mutual Limited, the reviewed interim results for the 6 months ended June. You were the person that once said to me, Lindsay, all I do is I read the introduction, then I read the conclusion, and the 220 pages in the middle I have to go through when I'm really, really bored. But I mean, that was in the old days when Old Mutual was a different company, but still quite complicated.
Very complicated. It's very, you know, insurers are extremely difficult to understand, and particularly because of the complexity of the instruments that they sell. And it requires life tables, all kinds of different stats. So understanding whether or not they're making money can be difficult. I think I do very simple exercises. I say, what's the economy growing at? You know, if it's only growing at about 0.5% or not growing at all, if consumers are under pressure, if the stock market's going nowhere, that hardly provides a backdrop for anybody to make money, or for Old Mutual or Sanlam or Discovery or any of the insurers or people who sell products to make money. And the only way you can make money is by stealing clients from somebody else. You know, the size of the cake is limited. So I think regardless of what they say, regardless of all the PR that they give you about how well they're doing, It's very, very difficult to try and get excited about it. And there was one number that I looked at, and that was the new business, or in their case, I think, how did they describe it? The results from operations, you know, and that was up about 2%. Yes. And that tells you about where they are. Look, also, they're having so many squabbles now between Peter Moyer and the board, and that's not doing them any good at all. So the shares, I don't know, I think the whole market's down for whatever reason today, and Old Mutual, you know, down 2%. I don't think that's bad, but they have come down quite dramatically over the last couple of weeks.
It's losing its credibility, in my point of view. The funds that it runs have been universally pilloried on social media, but the introductory statement to a set of results should not say this. The 10% increase in AHE, some people don't know AHE is. Just spell it out.
I don't know. I have to keep going looking it up.
It's not Twitter. You don't have a finite amount of words. So call it adjusted headline earnings. I think that's what it means. Demonstrates the resilience, etc. And it says, we continue to make progress in delivering our IT, obviously investment technology, refresh, and we now have over 122 bots in employment. Now, to me, that is undignified.
I don't know what a bot is. Well, is that a robot?
It's a short for robot. Yeah, people can't say a full word anymore. They have to have an acronym, or they have to shorten it. So you're going to be a vid-ero in the future rather than David Shapiro. It's laziness,
and if you keep going
and it's
down,
bad form. Shame on you, Old Mutual.
If you keep going down, the same thing, FUM, you know, which are funds under management, life, APE sales. You know, you shouldn't assume. The one thing that in our industry, and we try to do it on even when we talk, you know, when I talk to you or when others talk to you, hopefully, we try to keep it simple so that people know what we're talking about. And you have to assume that the people who are listening, you know, who are reading your results or alternatively listening to the show are not attuned to all those acronyms and various other aspects of it. So you've got to explain in very easy to understand terms. Did the company make a profit? Did they not make a profit? Where did they make it? And so on. It's very arrogant.
It is arrogant.
And I blame the PR people. I blame the PR people and the investor relations people, you know, for not For not dumbing down the numbers.
Yes, I mean, luckily I am pretty dumb, so I sound as I'm clever because I ask people, say, well, just explain for the people that are viewing or listening exactly what that means. But I'm doing it for myself because I don't understand. AHE, come on now, what's a bot? Why is Old Mutual putting in its opening statement for its results? It's an insurance company. Why are you talking about 122 bots? I'm not saying it's pathetic, but I say it's misplaced. RCL Foods was a moment ago up around about 13%. My 15-minute delayed screen shows it up 9%. This is a company that makes chickens and sugar, and both of those sectors under pressure, but it's done very well today.
Those are the two worst companies, I mean, two worst industries that you can ever be involved with, sugar and chickens. You know, you avoid it at all costs because there's always issues. Either those birds fly around the world, you know, they come in from all kinds of areas.
So not on their own, obviously, chickens, but you know what I mean.
I know, but you know what I mean. And sugar, the same thing. You know, there's you just have to throw a few seeds, and boy, sugarcane grows. So they're very, very difficult industries to manage or to ever make money with. The only time is you only make money is when those industries are totally bombed out and have some form of recovery, but extremely difficult. You know, unlike other commodities like platinum, it's finite. You know, there's so much in the ground that was established billions and billions of years ago when the world was a fireball or however it was formed. You know, whereas chickens you can grow all the time or breed all the time, and same with sugarcane. Just I think the share is just bouncing because it's been absolutely hammered recently, and maybe the results were slightly better than the market expected. I looked at it and I thought, this is pretty lousy number. Mm. But market, obviously, those with greater understanding of it, felt that it was slightly better than they were expecting.
It's also a volatile stock because of the very small free float. But anyway,
this is a Rembrandt company, you know. I mean, this is, this is part of that stable. It came out of Rainbow Chickens, and I think TSB, I think it was, I can't remember for years they had the sugar businesses within the Rembrandt stable and listed it, you know, kind of backward listed into Rainbow Chickens, which gave you this new food company, RCL.
Okay, let's go on to Bidvest now, which is something you understand a little bit more. Obviously, this is the South African operation of the old Bidvest group, and now we've got Bidcorp, which plies its trade overseas more. But the share price doing nice and steady. This is a sort of company that I would characterize as steady. Not boring, but steady. Yeah. Great management, great balance sheet, great history, good management, all that sort of thing, great management. Mm. And here it is, up nearly 3% as we pre-record this podcast.
Mm. Yeah, it's the best you can describe. Very solid management in a very difficult environment. Remember, they're a service company, and to a large extent, there are a number of different divisions to the company. You know, they run the motor side under a bit of pressure. Some of the areas in which they operate are struggling a bit, like the electrical side, which relies on infrastructural development or building. So, there are a couple of areas which are very difficult. And the other worry is, you know, I always think if you've got a serving, if you're paying service fees, you know, those are the first things that you start to cut back on. If you've got someone to kind of change the toilet paper and clean the toilets kind of thing, you start to, if a company is under pressure, you say, well, we'll find someone maybe internally to do that. So it is, service can come under pressure when the economy is, down. They also brought in Adcock Ingram for the first time, or they are bringing it in as a subsidiary. Having bought that, I think, and wanting to sell it, I think they're finding that it's best that they try and, build it up. So I've got big respect for, first it was for Joffe, and now Lindsay Ralphs, who's taken over. Very, very
fine
solid
name.
Operators. Lindsay.
Yes, it's a very good name, yes.
But they're around the corner from us here. They live in Melrose Arch, but that together with Bidcorp, I think both, In an environment where you're struggling to find anything and you're looking for a local business, you won't go wrong with Bidvest.
They're in your portfolio, aren't they, both of them?
I've got both of them. I've had them for many years, I like, probably at this stage, Bidcorp slightly better because of its offshore exposure, and you know, it's got a much broader reach. I've been waiting, and I think Lindsay's holding off a bit. I would have thought, and this is, you know, this is what I would have thought, that they would have started to embark, maybe going outside of their borders in areas in which they're quite good. They've always been on the logistics side, on the shipping side, and I would have thought they would have looked maybe internationally for something. But they're the kind of people who are not going to do a deal for the sake of doing a deal. Yes. You know, they've done a few little bolt-on acquisitions, but I can't fault them.
Okay, let's have a look at Sun International now. If you go to strictlybusinesspodcast.com or sharenet.co.za, you'll hear an interview I conducted at 9:45 a.m. this morning with a chap called Anthony Leeming, who's the CEO of Sun International. Mm. And what I like about this company, and under the stewardship of Anthony, is that despite the fact that Latin America, the two big economies that they're doing business in, Chile and Peru, gone through tough times, as we all have, and also South Africa, under extreme pressure, they never sit still. They're acquiring, they're conducting corporate activity so that when the times do turn around again, the economic times that is, and people have money to spend for gambling and staying in hotels and things, then they're ready for it. And the share price, this morning when I spoke to him, it was up about 1%, and at one stage up 10% today, now 9% higher.
It's interesting that the market has responded as positively as it has. I think what you say is correct. The difficulty is that we always believed that that gambling or gaming was bulletproof or
defensive.
Recession-proof. Not so. Defensive, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Not so. I think people do hold back. But Lindsay, what you're saying, they have to do what you're doing. They have to keep all the hospitality side fresh. You know, it's always got to be updated, upgraded. You've got to keep reinvesting in the machines, you know, particularly on the gaming side. You can never risk, because people get bored. So it is a high capital intensive business in order to keep people coming, to the casinos and that. But it's pretty, pretty flat. I think they also, Times Square is, a lot rested on this.
And it's done well.
I must admit, I haven't. It's doing okay. Remember, it's coming from a very low base.
Yeah.
But also, you can't escape. You can't escape the economy. You can't escape. You can't suddenly expect, massive increases right across the board in gaming. It's going to reflect what consumers have in their pockets, and But listen, you know, we've got some very good management, and I'm not criticizing Anthony Leeming in any way at all. I'm just saying these companies, like Lindsay Ralph, like Anthony, are battling in extremely difficult and tight circumstances.
Mm. Anything else you're seeing at the moment? I've just spoken to Liston Mainchies, our friend and an ex-colleague of yours, and it's startling what's happened over the month of August, because the gold index, I don't know what it was. I think it was up 29%, and over the year, 93.9%. It's extraordinary. When you got the financials down 3.8%. Yeah, there's some amazing, amazing performances over August.
And it's all in gold. You know me and gold. I'm not a gold bull.
No, you're not.
All. But I want to tell you something, that we have been, between gold and platinum, we have been seriously embarrassed on the local market, because the kind of gains that we've seen. Look, this is an industry which is very difficult. It goes flying up and it comes flying down, and it goes flying up and flying down, and it's very difficult to judge. I think what does come across, and credit to people like Pitfall Yun and maybe even John Bickard,
yes,
you know, who've stood by their views and have actually benefited from sticking around. To be fair, the platinum miners and the gold miners, I think the shares have run well ahead of the profits that they're actually making. So there's a lot of emotion in the actual share prices rather than in the profits that these businesses are making. So, but the game is, they're scoring goals. I'm not criticizing them. They're scoring goals. We not. And that's how you win matches. So it's, but I want to tell you something that I picked up as well, because I went through the numbers. And Impala, Harmony, Sibanye, all of these have done incredibly well year to date. Impala up 135%, Harmony up 120%. But Lindsay, you know what's interesting? I go down to BHP, Anglo's and Glencore, and nowhere near those kind of returns. Anglo's for the year to date, and don't give me last year, I'm just saying from the 1st of January, only up about 2%, and yet they've got Kumba and they've got Anglo Platts as two major subsidiaries. And I was a bit surprised that we haven't seen more, you know, in
the maybe their portfolio is so diversified. I mean, if you catch a commodity run, which includes, I mean, if you go to the Platinum Group Metal stocks, we can't call them platinum stocks anymore. We have to call them Platinum Group Metals. It's rhodium, it's rhodium, palladium, and
rhodium's gone through the roof.
Exactly.
Eh? You know, I'm saying that. So, you know, when we look at those businesses, you know, when we look at the underlying businesses, you know, I'm surprised that with Kumba, you know, with the iron ore price having run and also platinum price, that they actually haven't kept pace. I thought there would be more emotion in Anglo's, but admittedly, they've got copper, they've got coal, they've got diamonds, which has been a little, you know, very, very disappointing. And maybe that's why, maybe they ran ahead last year. And because there's been a tremendous run in Anglo American, maybe it's last year, but I was just a little surprised when I looked at Billiton's numbers, Billiton's performance, and Anglo's performance. Glencore's down now, Glencore's in negative territory, against the kind of platinum and gold run that we've seen.
Okay,
I'm gonna look here again. Yeah,
go on then. Have a look.
No, I'm just doing year to date. I've got this chart here, yeah. It's funny enough, like Sasol year-to-date, minus 36%. South 32 year-to-date, minus 20%. Anglo-American, correctly, up 1.8%. Then at the top, we've got those that I mentioned to you. So it's quite extraordinary to see that kind of performance that we've seen in the gold and platinum shares. And I sat here with like a deer in the headlights, you know.
I'm worried about Sasol. You mentioned Sasol, down 6% today, and it flattered to deceive. I think it went out on a sort of an appeasement roadshow or conference calls or whatever these people do these days. And suddenly today it's down 6%. It was 286 a couple of days ago. It's now 271. And there's something fundamentally wrong there. And I think people have not found them out, but they're just suddenly saying, no, there's a whiff of, not scandal, but a whiff of trouble there, so we're going to stand aside, and the flood of buying has gone.
Yeah, I think wait for the numbers to come through so you can actually break up and see, you know, how they made up. But I agree with you, when it's performing like this, you've got to be cautious. You don't need to try and find the bottom, you know. Rather be satisfied that things have been repaired and things are starting to look up, and you know, what had to be written off is written off, and the kind of management's in place that can actually you know, grow earnings. So I agree with you. Just stay back for the meantime. You don't have to get in now.
I'd love to talk about Arsenal versus Tottenham, the North London derby, which was last night, which was the best game I've seen this season. But unfortunately, I haven't got time to do that. And the reason I haven't got time to do it is because something upset me today, and I think it's upset a lot of people, and it's been trending over Twitter. And the headline is as follows, or rather the first couple of paragraphs go as follows, and this is from IOL. It says here, a 42-year-old man has been charged with the alleged rape and murder of a UCT student, as well as defeating the ends of justice. The Clarence Post Office employee, where first-year film and media studies student was last seen around lunchtime on August the 24th, appeared in the Weinberg Magistrates Court on Monday. Now, what happened was, just to put it into short form, is that this young lady, beautiful 19-year-old student, goes to collect a parcel, and the chap says, no, come back later because our lights are off. And apparently the lights were off. She goes back there, and it's noon on the 24th of August, broad daylight, in an affluent suburb of Cape Town, and she was raped. She fought back, and she was smashed on the head with a post office scale. The chap then disposed of her body in a suburb, wherever it was, and that was the end of it. A 19-year-old university student, who was the future of South Africa, was just snuffed out just like that, just because of some man's base
Desires,
right. Yeah. And the thing that really annoys me, I mean, this is a familiar story across the country. It's not unique. What's unique is that it was in a post office next to a police station in an affluent Cape Town suburb, which is just mind-boggling, is that the South African post office have blood on their hands because this man had a criminal record. And if there's 28% unemployment in this country, couldn't they find one of the tens of thousands of honest, decent South Africans desperate for a job, but they employ a criminal? It's disgusting, and it saddens
you know,
me.
It's really sad, and it's really symptomatic of the crime rates in this country. I think what makes our front pages, in fact, I don't even think these things make the front pages. They're probably on page 3 or 4. In any other country, there'd be outrage. And it happens all the time. I mentioned to you when you told me about this, of a young girl that was snatched this morning in Vanderbijl Park out of her mother's arms and held up for ransom for $2 million. They don't know where she is. And the problem is that you haven't got the kind of police. You know, our police services are not that they can actually solve this murder. Well, in the other murder, we know it's there. But how come you have a post office with only one worker where this person is able to do what he did? You know, there doesn't seem to be any kind of control cameras, whatever it is. There's just no safety mechanism there to protect, you know, to protect people. For me, it's our soft underbelly. You know, we will never become a great nation. We will never become a nation until we address that one factor. To me, it's the one thing that is scaring people out of this country and will scare investors. Until it's safe to walk the streets, Lindsay, forget about it. And you can have all the plans. You can have NHI. You can have development plans. You can have Tito Mboweni going on. People do not feel safe in the streets. They will never, ever invest in this place.
Greg Davies sent me a message after I tweeted about the tragedy in Claremont. It says here, tears flow as family members of Salbro Auto hopelessly walk through their car dealership, which has been burnt to the ground. And the headline is, this is in the Sowetan, and please go to it because it's another South African story which saddens me. I'm ashamed to be a South African shop owner after Jeppy violence. There was just a mob just went through looting.
This is in Johannesburg.
This was in Johannesburg, yeah.
Go
to the Sowetan, yeah. About 2 kilometres from the busy streets of Jeppy Police Station, several car dealership and shop owners in Malvern, Johannesburg, pick up the pieces after protesters ran rampant in the area on Sunday. To what end? Why? Why are you doing it?
Nothing. I don't know. There's this destructive element. The problem is that there's no... If you look in Hong Kong, and I mean, look at the protests, admittedly, they're turning slightly violent.
Yes.
But there's no burning of buses. There's no destruction of other people's property. You know, they're trying to make a peaceful protest. Yes, they're getting a little violent here, but the police, first of all, are in control. But they're not burning down Hong Kong. You know, and they're different. There's no deaths. There's been no injuries, or if anything minor, I don't know, someone running away maybe slips. But and that's the difference when there's protest here in South Africa or violent protest, it's just destruction. Anybody in their path and they loot. It's just awful. It's just absolutely awful. And it's really I say this in the strongest words. It's the one thing that will scare people away and keep forcing the skills out of the country. It's going to be violent. It's going to be crime. Nothing else.
David, on that somber note, we'll leave it. Thank you very much for your time this evening.
Pleasure.
That was Shapiro Wilb with David Shapiro from Sasser & Securities. He'll be back on the 5 o'clock shadow tomorrow evening with Greg Davies. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.